Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Negotiation Podcast. I'm your host, Todd Embley. And today we are joined by someone I've known for over a decade, Crystal Yu, a cross-platform influencer who's built a following on both Instagram and Xiaohongshu. Most influencers build an audience on one platform and stay there. Crystal Yu operates across two ecosystems that couldn't be more different. Instagram in the West and Xiaohongshu in China. The content strategies, audience expectations, brand partnership dynamics, and even the definition of authenticity diverge significantly between them. Crystal has built a following on both, and in this episode, she pulls back the curtain on what that actually looks like. Crystal walks us through how she became an influencer, what she's learned about creating content for two very different platforms, and how she approaches each one differently. She also breaks down the business side of influencing, fee structures, how brand partnerships come together, and what brands consistently get wrong when approaching creators for collaborations. For brands and marketers trying to understand how influencer marketing works in China versus the West, this episode offers a rare insider perspective. Crystal explains how Chinese brands approach collaborations differently than Western brands, why authenticity means something different on Xiaohongshu than it does on Instagram, and how to build trust with audiences on both sides of the divide. Enjoy.
I think Instagram and Xiaohongshu are actually very different platforms. Take a look at the Xiaohongshu for the background. In the beginning, actually, Xiaohongshu is basically people sharing something about products they bought. It's more like a notebook. That's how it actually started. And later on, it became more like a platform for people to have interaction and everything. So Xiaohongshu is more like a decision-making platform. Users go there to check information they need. For example, skincare recommendations, restaurants, fashion inspiration, travel tips, or even life advice. So people expect the contents to be useful and informative and authentic. I actually using it more like Google or Baidu nowadays.
Home to over 4 billion people, the Asia-Pacific region boasts one of the most powerful consumer markets on the planet. Not only is it home to half of the world's under 30 population, but it's also home to more than half the world's internet users. It's a market that no globally minded organization should ignore. But entering markets like China, Japan, or Southeast Asia is no easy task. Just ask the likes of Microsoft, Google, Uber, and Facebook. However, times are changing, and with the right partners, doors are slowly opening as more and more companies find success growing their key markets in APAC. I myself spent 8 years in China, mostly as a venture capitalist, helping early-stage tech companies grow in the Asia-Pacific market successfully. This show is dedicated to uncovering and examining successful Asia market entry and growth strategies by interviewing the experts who've done it before and truly understand what it takes to be successful in the region. My name is Todd Embley, and welcome to The Negotiation, brought to you by WPIC Marketing and Technologies.
Crystal, welcome to The Negotiation Podcast.
Thank you, Todd.
Crystal, let's start with your story. How did you even become an influencer? Was this something you set out to do, or did it kind of evolve organically?
Honestly, becoming an influencer was never really part of my original plan because in the beginning, I just started to sharing a novel online. And the novel is basically based on true story about me and my friends. And I gained the first about 30,000 followers on Weibo. And actually, that is how I started blogging. Later on, because of my work related with fashion industry, I get approached by a lot of PR friends. They are talking about, oh, I would love your picture. It's really like a good style. And we are looking for people who can make nice photos for us to post on social media. So they approached me and they started paying me for posting pictures for them. And this is how everything started. And later on, I think I started to grow in my fan base in Weibo slowly until reached about 1 million followers. And then I started to use Xiaohongshu. When I'm using Xiaohongshu, I think I hit a point when during pandemic, there are a lot of like people searching for good contents. And I make immersive skincare videos on my Xiaohongshu and I gained huge traffic. So I gained extra like 200 200K followers. So before pandemic, I had about 100K followers. And later on, I had about 300K followers, right? A year after. So I grew a huge fan base from Xiaohongshu and a lot of attention from different brands. And I work with many famous brands like Chanel, Dior, Estee Lauder, and L'Oreal. They are my biggest clients. And later on, now I had about more than 400K followers on Xiaohongshu and also about 1 million followers on Douyin.
Let me ask you a question that I think a lot of normal people would probably want to know, because we see the big influencers like yourself, gorgeous videos, gorgeous, you know, pictures, gorgeous places. You get to wear all the latest fashion from shoes to sunglasses to skincare to, you know, everything. It looks like the most luxurious lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Is it real?
For me, most contents, I think, pretty real. But of course, sometimes in order to show something or show something, maybe in my video, I wear it for the whole day. But in real life, maybe just only 1 hour or a couple of hours. I think there is a balance between like real and fake.
Yeah. And it's not fake because everybody knows that you're it's just instead of being in a magazine, you're on a internet platform, right? It's the same thing.
Yes.
You know, you wear the thing, do the things. It's just it's a photo shoot. It's still, you know, this kind of thing. Here's another question though. Is it I think I know the answer, but is it hard work? Like, you know, is it looks so like easy and you get to breeze through life and have these amazing brunches on these amazing patios overlooking yachts and cliffs and the ocean. You get to, you know, do all these kind of things. But is it harder work than people realize?
In the very beginning of the social media era, it may be much simpler for a lot of people just taking some eye-catching photos and get traffic. But nowadays, because there are so many bloggers, so many contents on the internet, and even with AI contents, if you wanted to stand out and be not even an excellent blogger, but an okay blogger, I think it takes some effort and not just, and sometimes even a bit of luck.
It was interesting, my daughter starts to do some YouTube videos and she would only get a few hundred views here and there, whatever. And then she used this one audio. So she would do like a performance, but the audio was all just an audio from the platform. Mm-hmm. And it was a very trending audio and she used it for her video. And in one day she had 25,000 views, right? And that video after a week is almost near 100,000 video views. Mm-hmm. And I guess what I'm saying is that I do think it's just kind of luck. You never know which video or which picture is going to go viral because it has to feed the algorithms.
True. Actually, that actually works for Chinese platform, especially Douyin, because sometimes you have those trendy music as the trendy BGM. And if you're using that BGM, it sometimes give you extra traffic. And it means it's actually because of the algorithm. But some bloggers, they will take advantage of like following the trends, while some others won't do that. Because if you're following the trends, sometimes you get traffic, but those traffic may not actually transferred or transaction from views to your fans, you know, like they are just like tracing the music or having some fun. And also for some accounts, even it transaction to like some followers or something, it may not become valuable fans to you, because when brands actually pay you to do some contents, they track your data, like what's your fan base like? Are they male or female? Are they like in the right age range they want to target? So there are a lot of like factors you need to consider. Some people, they just want to grow fan base, so they may like tracing the trends. But some people, they do not follow in the trends because, for example, they do not want to male fans or something. So there are a lot of like trade-off as well.
Now you're active on both Instagram and Xiaohongshu.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to us about the differences between the two platforms? I think a lot of people think they're mostly the same, like, you know, even TikTok versus Douyin, right? Something, you know, a lot of people think, or Weibo and Twitter back in the day, everybody used to say, well, it's the Chinese Twitter. Not necessarily true. So talk to us about the difference between Instagram and Xiaohongshu and, you know, the things that work on one platform that wouldn't necessarily work on the other.
I think Instagram and Xiaohongshu are actually very different platforms. So take a look at the Xiaohongshu for the background. In the beginning, actually, Xiaohongshu is basically people sharing something about products they bought. It's more like a notebook. That's how it actually started. And later on, it became more like a platform for people to have interaction and everything. So Xiaohongshu is more like a decision-making platform. Users go there to check information they need. For example, skincare recommendations, restaurants, fashion inspiration, travel tips, or even like life advice. So people expect the contents to be useful and informative and authentic. So I actually using it more like Google or Baidu nowadays. And sometimes it even helps me to take care of some errands or how to fill in the visa form, how to apply credit cards, etc. The algorithm also rewards contents that provides value and keeps people engaged for longer. But Instagram feels more like emotional and authentic. So I kind of feel like Instagram, they care more about storytelling. And for brands, they do maybe more about branding building. But for Xiaohongshu, it's very, you can do something very commercial. You can even like have your brand account and doing do live streaming and sell directly from your live streaming, you know. So I think, users are interact very differently on two platforms. On Xiaohongshu, audience tend to ask like detailed questions. For example, I'm going to Yale very soon. So I even had my future classmates connected with me from Xiaohongshu. They say like, hey, I saw you posted your offer letter. So I'm in the same class and they find me from Xiaohongshu. And then people find me like, do you want to rent an apartment together? All these kind of things. So I kind of feel like Xiaohongshu is very international. Meanwhile, you can make friends and ask useful information. I find people who are renting apartments in New Haven, and I chat with them on Xiaohongshu as well. But Instagram audience, I think, usually more focused on like visual lifestyle overall vibes. It's a lot of like, the contents are much shorter. It's like a few pictures or a few seconds videos. But then for Xiaohongshu, there are all kinds of contents, more like, but focused with useful information there. People tend to read, tend to get information. So for brands, Xiaohongshu is a very good platform to educate your market, to create your fan base, how to educate your current user or acquire your future users.
Let's talk about content creation,
mm-hmm.
How you approach content differently. I think that would give a good lens into how the two platforms look different. So how do you create, and what is your approach to creating content for Xiaohongshu versus Instagram? Are you using even the same content on both platforms, or do you create content differently and specifically for each of, you know, of the two platforms? I'm curious, even if you just edit or use different music or different filters or anything, how do you approach them?
I definitely create different contents for different platforms, because each platform's algorithms are very different from each other. Even for my WeChat Moments, Weibo, Douyin, Xiaohongshu, Instagram, I post completely different things. For example, Xiaohongshu, I pay much more attention to how to make my content useful to my audience. I think the users, they really value if they can get something out of the content. For example, skincare tips, product recommendations, how I plan my travel, or even something like emotional support, or if they feel calm after watching my video. So when I create for Xiaohongshu, I usually think more carefully about storytelling, structure, captions, and I post the videos about like 1 to 2 minutes, something like that. But Instagram, I'm more casually posting like maybe some pictures, some easy OOTD or something, just something that I think fits my lifestyle, my taste, something I like, or something I feel pretty, or maybe just some moments in my life. I don't think like because Instagram for me is much less commercial, so I'm more using Instagram kind of like record my life. But Xiaohongshu, I think I make a balance about showing some of my life and some is more commercial, because I also had a lot of like clients working with me.
Yeah. And I would say for me, even for my company and my brand, we use Instagram not really for selling, but we do it to, and we don't even inform that much. I'm not telling people about programs or rebates or sales or this kind of thing. We're actually doing fun or funny videos. I think we show the culture of who we are as a company, as a team, you know, the fun that we have. Sometimes we demonstrate products, you know, but hey, you know, also we hosted this golf tournament, or we raised this money for charity, or we did the kind of things. Again, much, much more storytelling. And it's easier to do because we're not thinking about selling. We're thinking about trust and culture is more our approach.
Sure. I wanted to add something because different people using social media for different purpose. So for example, in Xiaohongshu, I'm using it because I'm sharing my contents. Meanwhile, brands pay me to do some contents to help them educate their potential customer or their current customer. But some people using Xiaohongshu, for example, they want to like acquire users. So they may not care about if the content will go viral or not. They more care about how many potential clients they might attract. Especially for some brands, I think they, or some IP accounts there, they do not care about how many likes they got. They care about how many potential users will ask questions on Xiaohongshu. Because Xiaohongshu is the... their user base is more, how to say, more well-educated. Maybe the income is more higher than average of Douyin users. And then some people, for some brands, they listed there, as you mentioned, they are for trust, for building an image, for more people to go to their live streaming channel to buy or like go to their shops or something. So I think different people using it for different channels. And in order to achieve their goal, they need to make different style of contents as well. Some may be brands using it as a press room. Some may be using it as a window. Some may be using it as a after sale care or something. So I think there are all kinds of people on the platform with different purpose, doing different contents. And I think it's, you know, like it's just a big ecosystem there. It's like our society. Yeah.
So let's talk about the business side of things. How does an influencer like yourself get compensated for work? You could talk about how, not how much. And can you break down how a fee structure might work? I think it's a world that very few people know and understand what really goes on behind the scenes and are always curious, like, oh, I wonder how much they're getting paid to wear those clothes. And do they get to keep the clothes? Did they get them for free? You know, are they paid to travel to certain places? Do they get their hotels paid for? I'm thinking it's just very curious. Is it, you know, is it per post? Is it per campaign? Is it affiliate based? Or anything else?
Okay. I think the influencer industry in China is really like extremely mature and comparatively very commercialized compared to many other markets. So many brands, when they first come to China, they always don't know where to start. And as the questions you mentioned, I think it depends on when I'm doing consulting for brands, I think it's a balance of what is your goal and how much budget you have. For some brands, of course, like you can start from seeding. So you don't pay a lot, but you maybe give products away in exchange for some contents. And you can also do like a paid contents. And you can always find different bloggers with different price. So I don't think there is any standard in the market. But I would say like the key is to find the right person to work with. So for example, I remember my friend shared a case with me. It's a lingerie brand. So for example, they pay $30,000 to work with a blogger and gained nothing, but they pay like $5,000 with another blogger with much less fans, but then like a lot of like transactions in their online shops. So I kind of feel like sometimes it's not about the money, it's more like about finding the right people. But how to find the right people to work with, I think there are a lot of tricks there. So either you take a look one by one yourself, but takes some time to, I think, learn how to read all the numbers, or you find a reliable like a third party or a company to help you achieve that. Most company would do multiple plan or a hybrid mode, some KOC, they would do like seeding exchange for some contents, and sometimes, and then the next tier is basically paid contents. And normally brands will make plans for like top tier bloggers, second tier bloggers, third tier KOCs or something. So it really depends your budget and how much or how big the audience base you want to target and all this kind of stuff.
What types of brands do you typically work with? I know you talked about the clothing, although L'Oreal would be skincare. Talk to us about which ones, and then how do those partnerships come together? What is it about at Crystal U, the great Crystal? What is it about you that makes them want to come to you? How have you created your platforms, your following? Because I'm guessing like, I think that for you, you design the brand of Crystal a certain way. You design your followers, you design your pages, because you also want to represent certain brands. You can't choose exactly, but you can start to manipulate your look, your following, so that you can attract the brands you want to work with as well. And do they then approach you, or do you reach out to them, or are you using, like you said, a third party agency to do that work for you?
Actually, in the beginning, of course, when I was like a small fan base, I work with some agencies. They send me some cases to work with. And then later on, as my accounts grow bigger on the platform, I started to approach the by brands. So on my account, there is a email information or contact information, brands can search and they can directly contact me. But big brands, they work through some companies or third parties because of their own company regulations. But some company, they will contact me directly as well. And I'm mainly working with like beauty and skincare brands right now. Some of my long-term clients include brands on the groups like L'Oreal and Estee Lauder. A lot of my contents attracts like a specific audience. So brands can also see my data on the back end of the post they work with me. So on my back end, you can see like my fan base is on Xiaohongshu, about like 95% they are female and aged between 25 to 35, which is like the right range, especially for skincare people when want to target. And they mailing in Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, Shenzhen, those like tier one,
top tier cities.
Yeah, so they are more well educated. They have like a higher income. So that's exactly for skincare and fashion brands they want to target. And then even when they search, I think on the back end, like which bloggers feed them, I think my name would appear like pretty much like among the tops. And then they will like either approach me directly or through a third party and discussing about the partnership. And for Xiaohongshu and Douyin, the whole process is very very mature. So basically, every blogger has a standard price, and then the brands need to pay through the platform in order to not blocked by the platform, because the platform will take a service charge.
From an influencer's perspective, what do you wish brands understood better when they're looking to partner with creators like yourself? What makes a collaboration successful versus what makes it frustrating for you trying to work with brands?
I think one thing many brands still don't fully understand is that good influencer marketing is not just about traffic or numbers. It's really about trust and storytelling. Sometimes brands focus too much on controlling every small detail of the content instead of trusting creators' understanding of their own audience. Experience where a brand was extremely particular about things like how to do the lighting, what's your hairstyle need to be, each scenery, what kind of clothes you need to wear. They need to check every detail before I'm shooting. But you know, like I am not doing a TV commercial, because nowadays no one wants to watch a TV advertisement commercial. Social media nowadays, today, they actually cares about like, it's the more personal is actually better, because like the audience, they don't want to be educated. You can't let them feel like they are being educated. You need to like absorb the information organically. So if something looks too perfect, it can start to feel fake or over commercialized. For example, some brands, they want me to do my skincare with my hair flawless. But think about it, who does like skincare with flawless hairs? Like, you know, like.
Yeah, you've got a perfect glow up or blow up on your hair. Your hair is perfectly done, but you have no eyelashes, no makeup, no. Doesn't work like that.
It's fake, right?
But then, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and because in real life, of course, you do your skincare while your hair is still messing, or when you just woke up, or when you're about to head to bed, you won't be having like a flawless hairs like tied up or anything and do your skincare. So I kind of feel like some brands still lack of the feeling. What is the difference between social media and a TV commercial?
Okay, how do brand partnerships differ between Western platforms and Xiaohongshu? Are Chinese brands approaching collaborations differently than Western brands?
I do think there are differences between Chinese brands and Western brands when it comes to influence collaboration. Because Chinese brands are usually more direct and fast-paced in communication, the whole process tend to be like move really quick from initial contact to campaign execution. They are often very like performance-driven and pay close attention to metrics like engagement, traffic, conversion. Because China's social media ecosystem evolves so fast, brands here can generally very aggressive and efficient in their marketing strategies. And then for Western brands who come to China or have the power and the resource to come to China, mostly they are luxury or beauty brands, right? So those global brands, I think they have like a mature marketing system, but also sometimes I feel like they bureaucracy, if I can use that word.
They
normally have like several layers, or like their response is very slow. So my personal experience is like my script with local brands, I get the response very fast. And then I can always like, maybe even sometimes I can catch some trends or as you say, like some hit BGM or something. But then with in Western brands, most of the time, it takes much longer time to get their feedback. So the whole process is longer and it's not very possible to do some trends tracking or something, because whenever they design the campaign, maybe according to some trends at the moment, but when they carry it out 3 months later, the trend is already gone. So sometimes I feel like this is actually a bit disadvantage, I think, for Western brands. But
they just move slow.
Yeah, but I do think it's changing. Like I do think some brands, they try to change it and they try to create some trends for themselves. It's improving, but still, yeah.
So let me ask you to describe the @CrystalYou brand. Okay. Not you yourself, but how would you describe, what descriptive words would you use to describe how you've built your brand? Things like, you know, elegant or classy, or like what are the words that would describe where you've taken your online branding?
I think my image, especially on Xiaohongshu, is I'm standing for intelligence, elegant, quality, smart, girl power, girl boss, feminism, or this kind of related words or tags. So the audience I'm tracking, as I mentioned before, is more for tier 1, tier 2 city female, who actually share kind of like the same value, looking for high quality luxury lifestyle. So I work mainly with luxury brands, and they use my contents either to educate potential customers or getting or wanting more people to know about their brand. And sometimes they're using my video as a demo for their clients. So for example, I work with brands like Lancome and Olay and some other top skincare brands. When they approached me, they already told me like, we want this video to demonstrate to our clients how actually to use their product. So their salespeople will share the video to their clients who bought the product, and they will share the contents on their official account to demonstrate how actually using it. And my video quality is also really like, I wanted to be modest, but I have to say my video quality is among the top. So some brands nowadays, in order to pay a big fee to do a TV commercial, they will pay me to do kind of like the same quality video and share on their official accounts.
So how do you get great quality? And do you bring the photographer or do they send the videographer photographer?
Actually, I shoot myself either with my photographer or with myself. But I use sometimes I use more professional machines like cameras or something. And sometimes I just using phones to make the content more personal. So more people would want to watch.
Okay. Do you travel usually with a photographer?
No, actually, I do most of the contents myself. And sometimes I get help from my friend. Because if a photographer can make your contents go viral, then why didn't he or she do the contents for her or himself?
I can think of one way, because maybe they're not as attractive, frankly.
But they don't need to shoot themselves personally. They can even shoot something or,
landscape or real estate.
Yeah. Yes. Or anything. So I don't think I rely on any typical photographer or anything, but I do sometimes train my own assistant to help me get certain things. But I think it's your account. It's basically your brain. All the contents is through your eyes, your taste, your choice, So I enjoy doing things myself. Meanwhile, I think as my team expanding, they can help me with something, but something I still need to do myself.
I wanted to ask also about collaborations. When you work with other influencers and you shoot together, mm-hmm. both on camera, maybe one other, two other, things like that, is it important on both Instagram, Xiao Hong Shu, is it still relevant? Is it still working to do collaborations and do brands like that as well? Or is it really just about gaining more followers than maybe what the brands want you to do?
I think for my content, I don't work with a lot of other bloggers. Because my content is more about a solo thing scenery. But sometimes for OOTD fashion, sometimes we do co-posting, creating. Do you mean by this kind of a co-creating with a brand or co-creating with another blogger and a brand?
Co-creating, I remember, whatever it was, maybe 6-8 years ago, you worked with Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
I remember her from Shanghai. But, stuff like that where you're working with other influencers.
I don't think when we're shooting some contents together, we aim for some typical thing in return. Sometimes it's just friends hang out together and you're making some fun contents together. So, and everything comes traffic or collaboration is just by chance.
Authenticity. Okay. Hold on.
One more thing. But for some best economy. So some brands will typically do some bestie contents for this kind of scenario.
You're saying bestie, like best friend, bestie.
Because some people, they will, there are accounts, we call it a CP account, like a couple account. It's an account made by a couple. Or several accounts, several girls post about each other and they always do contents with each other. And this kind of accounts, we also call it more like bestie accounts. That exists as well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And that's sometimes I look at that and I'm just curious about the business side. And how that works. But I just don't know if it's all that relevant because it's not that big.
Mm.
So
it's big.
I think I'll pass on.
It's big, especially for the couple accounts. A lot of Valentine's Day.
Couples, yes.
Valentine's Day, Chinese Valentine's Day, May the 20th or Christmas or something. They always have brands specifically make campaigns and they will acquire couple accounts to post their stuff,
Sure, but not as much on just friends.
Not as much as on friends, yeah.
I wanted to ask about authenticity, because that's really big on Xiaohongshu. And users really value genuine reviews. Like you said, Xiaohongshu is a little bit more about selling, and it's where customers might come to do shopping. This is where they're doing product research, right? They're trying to make a purchase decision. Instagram is just you're doom scrolling a little bit, you know, while you're at the on the loo. How do you balance sponsored content with maintaining trust with your audience?
I think for each, account, the strategy is quite different. So, for example, if your account is sharing funny videos, right? And suddenly one day you are introducing like, hey guys, I'm using this toothpaste or something. So people obviously know that it's an advertisement or it's a collaboration. And they may not really trust in what you're saying. But if you constantly doing product sharing, like every day sharing a different product, then people wouldn't be surprised if you introducing something. Even they will come to seeking your professional opinion on that. Do you understand what I'm talking?
Yes. If it's a big surprise and it's very different than your usual content, clearly it was a paid for kind of sponsored spot. It has low trust.
Yeah.
But if you're demonstrating products all the time, and you're always bringing new products, higher level of trust.
Yes. So I think this logic on all the platforms is pretty much the same. So for example, you are a fashion influencer and you go to all the shows, you get all the first hand of the each season, all those things. So whenever people want to say, oh, what's the trend? They will go to your page, see your outfits and stuff. And then for skincare, if you're constantly sharing your good skin, for example, I have really good skin and I look much younger than my real age, and people will trust like what you are sharing. They wanted to say what product you are using, what's your skincare routine every day. So it's a natural trust. And then some people, they just focusing on a product test. And then you can see from the previous videos, he or she share like, for example, different products from different brands. And then people would know that person has access to maybe all kinds of cream, face cream. So people who don't have the money to buy all the cream, they will check those videos to see the reviews about those products and then make a decision which one to buy. So I think there are different ways to build trust. And then like it's basically the content creator's job to how to build this trust with their audience. And also like the function of the creator is basically the bridge between the brand and the users. So how that person, the account, how they deliver the message is actually the commercial value of an IP or of a content creator's account.
Where do you see influencer marketing heading in the next few years, especially in China? What trends are you paying attention to right now? And where do you think it's all going? Because you've been doing this a long time. Like you've been doing this longer than most people. Like even when we met 10 years ago, I think you were just kind of starting to really even just grow your brand. You already had a following. For those who don't know, Crystal used to run marketing for the top club in Shanghai. So she was already throwing, you know, huge parties every week, already started to have a following then. So you've been in the game longer than most people. So where do you see trends? Where are things going?
A few years ago, brands are more like focused on traffic and followers, how each post performance. But nowadays, I think both brands and consumers, they are becoming like much more sophisticated. So people care less about how many followers or engagements, but more about like what they get out from the post. So one trend I'm watching closely in the is actually the rise of the niche creators. So there are more specific niche content creators. For example, you don't need a necessary million of followers anymore. If there is a car, for example, like for some car brands, they use some, creators focusing on car, but not a lot of people can or interested or be able to afford luxury cars, you know. So sometimes even like they have about like 20,000 followers, but maybe those are like the people who are on among the top of the pyramids, and that's already very like a valuable audience for them. So I think one is the rise of the niche creators, the niche market. And also, I think there are more like founder lead and personal brand content. A lot of like business owners started to create their own official account. And then like one way they can attract like more consumers to trust. And one way they can also share more information about their company or their brand. So I think nowadays, everyone can actually start their IP on social media. And another interesting trend is actually the growing role of AI. I think AI is already changing how creators edit video, generate ideas, and manage content production. I think it will make content creation more efficient, but at the same time, it maybe will make authenticity even more valuable. So when AI-generated content becomes everywhere, real human experience and genuine perspectives become more important, not less.
How do you see, and I wanted to ask you, this was up next, I wanted to ask the general question about trends first, but we have to touch on AI. And maybe you can talk to us a little bit more about, you know, are you using AI even just to generate a script or to, generate ideas? How is it influencing how people follow, how people interact? Are brands requesting AI involvement? Are they requesting no AI involvement? And how are the platforms handling AI? Are they giving a blue check mark beside real posts and like some sort of AI flag to let the people know that this was AI, not a real person? Tell me all about AI.
I think most of the platform nowadays, they are not completely open for AI. So one thing is, for example, in China, Douyin is more open to AI contents than Xiaohongshu. And then both platforms, they require to mark if your post is generated by AI. And also, when brands working with me, they would not specifically acquire me to use AI. Normally, they acquire not using AI. And at least don't show any trace of AI. Otherwise, they need to mark it as something related with AI for the advertisement, and then the whole process for the platform to check your contents takes much longer. So I think generally we don't show any trace of my personal contents. But of course, we are not talking about those ones who typically sharing AI contents. But then during my work process, I use it to help me, for example, summary the brief or help me to draft some script for the draft version. But then eventually to finish it, I still need to do it manually because I need to edit my own thoughts, my own understanding about the product, to have the personal view about it, because otherwise AI can work for all the other contents, then my contents will not have any differentiation from the others. So I would be also thinking about what is my contents vertical scope compared with the other bloggers and how to stand out or how to be different from the others. And I think that's my value for a lot of brands.
For someone who's thinking about becoming an influencer or building a cross-platform presence, what advice, based on all your years of experience, what advice would you give somebody just starting out?
I think the most important thing is to start from something you generally care about instead of trying to copy what's currently trending. A lot of people think being an influencer is mainly about authentic followers or going viral. But I think long-term content creation is actually very emotional demanding. If you don't truly enjoy what you are creating, it becomes very difficult to stay constant over time. And I think for brands, you need to seeking for, if you don't know the market and if you don't know the real process, the easiest way is basically to find a reliable third party. And but meanwhile, if you don't know how to differentiate from which third party is reliable, I think you can start from small budget to test, you know, to test the algorithm, to understanding and to play with contents. And then you will learn about the market, the local market very fast. So I think for brands, you need to think about different dimensions. That's basically my advice, maybe for brands, how to enter in the market.
You're 18, 19 years old again, and you are starting out, and you're trying to pick a niche to start in. What niche are you going to choose based on everything you know right now?
Actually, I will start with what I really like, but I already know what I like and the contents I want to share. Let's twist your question a little bit. How to find the passcode for your traffic? Like how to find the password to your success? I think it's really to testing out, because I helped a lot of people finding their password or their key to success. For example, I had a hairdresser, and he actually had really good understanding of how to do the hair. So I told him like, hey, you can write down those things whenever you told me. I'm like, write it down and share it on Xiaohongshu. And I kind of taught him how to take pictures, how to use hashtag, all this kind of stuff. And then before, he posted several posts and nothing happened. And after I told him like which angle to shoot the picture, you need to write maybe at least 100 words for the body and then use some certain hashtags, he gained like 300 likes for that post. He was really, really happy. And he like, he's like, oh no, now I know how to make posts on Xiaohongshu. And then he actually gained more followers. And later on, he went back to his city, opened his own salon. Like he used to be just a hairdresser in Shanghai, but later on he became a boss of like his own salon brand, because then he shared how to use Xiaohongshu for other hairdressers work for him, you know. So, and then I also had a massager. Like this massager people, she really likes sharing about which part, how to massage, and why it is good for your body. So I feel like she really had a lot of like knowledge about human body and the Chinese, like medicine or this treatment. So I also told her like, you can shoot something, teach people how to massage, you know, like how to soft intense or something, how to relax your shoulder, how to relax your back or something. So I thought about some topics for her to talk about on Xiaohongshu. And later on, I think she gained a lot of followers. And then one day I was going through her contents or something, and she's taking this advertisement about, you know, like those healthcare products.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind
of supplements.
Yeah, supplements. Yeah, and then I give you two more examples. So I have another friend. She used to be like a food blogger, but then her content never really goes viral. But then one day, she starts during pandemic. She was locked at home, so she shooted her OOTD in the elevator, you know, in the building elevator, and then that content actually goes viral. So her passcode to traffic is actually fashion, not food. So later on, she became a fashion blogger, and she gets a lot of like followers because people likes her clothing taste more than like the food she's cooking. And then another example, actually a male blogger, he posts about his life or something, but actually never really works well. But then his job is actually a food importer and exporter. Like his family business is basically about food. And then during pandemic, he shooted some contents about how to cook with the sauces or with the ingredients like his company made. And then he doesn't show face. He just recorded his voice. And he actually really has good voice. And all his like cooking video goes viral. So his passcode to traffic is actually cooking. So everyone has different passcode to gain the right audience. So I think keep trusting, keep testing, and always like check the data, check all the performance of each post, try it out, do some A/B testing or these kind of things. You will learn a lot about yourself.
Data is king. And so for those who don't know this as well, how would you? Crystal and I met because she was doing a startup that
yes.
The fund that I worked for had invested in. And so Crystal and I worked pretty closely together for almost 6 months while she was part of the cohort at Zhongguo Jiasu, mm-hmm. or China Accelerator. Mm. Now, I like the advice you said, because it is very entrepreneurial. It is just continue to run experiments, right? And take your ego out of it. Don't do what you want. Do what your customers want and are willing to pay for. And you just need to figure out what that is. And all of this kind of goes back to those early day entrepreneurial thinking. I mean, you can build for your entire life what you want. It might never become a business. So you either want to build what you want or you want to build a business. And you have to decide which of those you actually want. If the goal is to build a business, then don't have any ego attached to the product. Just chase the data. And the data comes with great experiments. So truly being really good at running experiments, collecting data, reading data, and then the cycle or the iteration cycle, if you can speed that up and continue to test, then you're going to eventually land on really what works. Because all you care about is not trying to sell a solution, but figuring out what the problem is, who has it, and who's willing to pay for a solution. And then you get them to tell you what it is that you should do, what you should build, what you should create. And voila, you should have a business or a following.
Great ending.
Sounds right, right?
Yes.
Yes. All right, Crystal, this has been great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I think I've been chasing you to come on here for quite some time, but you're always so busy and all over the world. And then soon you're going to Yale because you want to do an MBA. So why not? And you're a co-founder in multiple AI companies and brain science companies, because of course, why wouldn't you be? Where can people find you? Where can people follow you, both on Instagram, Xia Hongshu, but also your art website? Because why wouldn't you have an art website of just in everything else you do?
I think for international audience, they can find me easily on Instagram, the Crystal Yu, and the Crystal Y-O-O. And then on Xiaohongshu, Douyin, or Weibo, if anyone has it, you can search for 了不起的水晶.
And, yes, so it's at the Crystal U, mm-hmm. and U is spelled Y-O-O,
yes.
at the Crystal U.
Mm-hmm.
And your art website, what is it, yuyanchenspace.com?
Yes, my art website, yuyanchenspace.com.
I never say that very well. It's the foreigner. I can't say it natively. But yes. Okay, great. Crystal, thank you very, very much for coming on the show. We really appreciate your time today.
My pleasure.
Okay. So for everybody who just listened to this whole podcast, please do the algorithms a favor and like or subscribe or interact with us in some way that helps the platforms understand that you liked it and that other people might like it. And then because they're so selfish, they only want more people to spend more time on their platforms. They only want to promote content that they think everybody else is going to like. So if we give them that idea, then they'll share it with more people. So we would really appreciate that from y'all. If you want to get in touch with us, if you have guest recommendations, if you have anything that you want to say, you can always reach us at podcast@wpic.com or .co, excuse me, not .com, .co. But from me, from the great Crystal U, and from everybody at the negotiation team, thank you very much for listening and or watching. And we will see you next time.
Growing a company is hard. Doing it in a foreign market, exponentially so. The best piece of advice I can give you is not to do it alone. When you start looking at the Asia-Pacific region for further expansion possibilities, and I sincerely hope you do, make sure you choose the right partners to do it with. My good friends at WPIC Marketing and Technologies have almost 20 years of experience helping brands, just like yours, enter China, Japan, and Southeast Asia. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Negotiation, and if you're interested in being a guest or want to connect with me or any of our team, please reach out to us at podcast@wpic.co, and be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.